Today's guest on the show is a holistic healthcare practitioner for 8 years, a certified emotion and body code practitioner, and a founding member of the Inside Out Institute. She also happens to be a veteran of the Canadian Navy. Welcome to the show, Ashley LeBlanc.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for joining. So at what age did you join the Canadian military?
Oh my goodness, I was 19. I graduated high school at 18, and then I, you know, took a year off, and I was very tired after high school. So I took some time, and I knew coming out of high school, I didn't want to go to school because I didn't know what I wanted to study. And so I didn't want to get into debt with, you know, and end up with like, you know, an art degree or something I wasn't going to use or be happy with. So I was looking for other options, and I happened to stumble across the option of the Navy. So I joined a year after I graduated.
Welcome to Changemakers Without Borders. I'm your host, Mike Cooper. This show is broadcast on CKMS, Radio Waterloo in Ontario, and CFUZ, Peach City Radio in British Columbia. You can also find this show on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts. Did you have an environment that supported you to go into that direction? Like, how did you find out about it?
Yeah, so that's a fun story. So my parents are from the East Coast. My mom's from Nova Scotia. So the summer after I graduated high school, my mom took me, my brother, and my sister down to Nova Scotia to visit the family. And her and I we flew into Halifax, from Calgary to Halifax, and we spent a day in Halifax before we kind of, you know, carried on with our travels. And while we were there, I was kind of in the space of like, what am I going to do? And, you know, I get just graduated. I didn't have a plan yet. And, you know, everything was up in the air. And we went on a tour of the HMS Sackville, which is a 1940s corvette. So it was actually in the war that they had changed into a museum. So you could actually go on and like see where the sailors ate and, you know, the guns and, you know, go up to the bridge. And I remember walking into the mess where they eat and sleep, and I looked around and I went, I can kind of see myself doing this. And so we did the rest of the tour, and we did the rest of our vacation, and I got home about, you know, 10 days later, and I was like, I'm going to join the Navy. So I'm like, Mom, I'm going to join the Navy. And she's like, okay, sounds good.
Wow.
So yeah.
You chose an intense route in the Navy. You became a marine electrician. Why did you choose this one in particular?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I went down to the recruiting office, and the way they do it is they have basically what trades are open and available. So I went and looked and was like, oh, this looks interesting, and that looks interesting, and that looks interesting. And when I went home and actually read about them and kind of, you know, talked to my mom about them to get a different point of view, I decided that electrician was the best way to go because I knew I wasn't going to be in the military longer than 10 years. And so with being an electrician, at least I would have something in my back pocket, right? I would have a trade, I would have a skill, something that I wouldn't come out and be like, well, that was 10 years wasted. Like, now I have to start all over again, right? So I figured worst case scenario, when I got out, at least I would have a trade, right? If I chose to do that. So, you know, and also too, the other trades didn't really appeal to me. You know, I didn't want to be an operator who had to go to school for, you know, years before I even got qualified to do my job, right? So I was like, no, 8-week course, I'm good. just give me 8-week course, a safety course, I'm good. Let's go.
So what are the risks? What are the risks involved in this type of job that you took?
I would say risks on every level, you know. Of course, there's like the physical safety of being on a ship that's, you know, moving in the ocean and, you know, sleeping as you're rolling 30, 45 degrees. And, you know, there's just like you have to eat your food like on a plate really fast because it's moving, right? So there's that risk. Also, for me, which I didn't realize until after, there was a risk to my health, right? My mental, my emotional, my spiritual health. And unfortunately, I realized that a little too late. And that's what got me to where I am today. That was kind of the beginning of the journey for me. So I don't regret any of it. Would I do it again? Probably not, you know, hindsight being 2020. But it was, you know, I was the only female at times in the engineering department by myself, right? So, you know, when people go, oh, you know, I work in male dominated, I'm like, yep, I know what that's like. At least you get to go home every night, right? So it was very, you know, one day at a time, and you just kind of like one sale at a time, and you just take everything as it comes. And on the flip side of that, one of the things I loved about the military was no 2 days are the same, right? Sometimes I would wake up and be like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen today. And I would end up going over to an American ship and spending time on an American ship, right? So, you know, like I couldn't have guessed that or seen that coming. And it just kept everything really interesting and fresh and, you know, going, because I was doing something different every day.
Yeah, so how was it working with the men there? Did you work in a, like, one group all the time, like a 5-person team, or was it a bigger team?
Yeah, so the way we would do it, my rank and my job, I was a watch keeper. So my job was to sit at the electrical control console and make sure that the power that was coming from the generators was being distributed through the ship properly. So that meant if we were, like, for some reason a generator just shut off and dropped the load, I would have to black out everything and then start from the beginning, right? So I was also the first line of defense for electrical needs on the ship. So if, like, up on the bridge, if they're like, you know, they call down to the machinery control room and say, hey, we have a light out. And they'd be like, okay, Ashley, you know, up on the bridge, they have a light out. And I'd be like, okay, up I go 6 decks, you know, like 10 minutes later, get to the bridge, like, okay, guys, I'm here. What's up? Right. So it was good. I worked with engineers, or we call them stokers. So they were the machinery, made the boat, the engines run. I also worked with the hull techs, which were the, they're in charge of any building that has to happen on the ship. And the electricians.
What were some good memories that stand out to you when you think of the time in the Army?
Yeah, good question, actually. So one of my very dearest, closest friends I sailed with, he was a stoker, and we've now known each other. Well, I would have met him when I was 20, and I'm 36. So he knew me, like, before I was a best practitioner, before I was an emotion co-practitioner, before I even was, like, qualified to do anything on the ship, like, just stumbled onto the ship, like, hey, guys, what's going on? Like, right? So he's, you know, it was worth it for that friendship, right? And we're still tight, and, you know, I would consider him one of my best friends, right? And so that was the good people, worth it. Like, you know, if you're meeting good people, right?
How did the officers react to you, or did they look to you the same as the rest of the soldiers?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I can't speak for them, of course. I like to think that the officers saw me equally. I would say it was more like some of the people who were electricians, my fellow workers, and some of the stokers. And, you know, a few, like one of my last sales, we kept having blackouts, and blackouts are really hard on the equipment because there's power and then all of a sudden there's not. So nothing gets shut down properly. So it's really hard on the electronics. So of course the chief electrician was asking questions and getting the text to try to, you know, like, what's going on and what's this and why do we keep blacking out? And it just happened that a lot of them were on my watch. Literally, they were on my watch, right? Mm-hmm. So I could restore power really quickly, but it was a problem. And so what happened was, I learned this after, actually from that friend, like a year after I got out of the military, we were having lunch and he told me all about this. I had no clue at the time. And apparently the chief electrician actually wanted to charge me, like put me in jail because of these blackouts. And, you know, basically, you know, poop rolls downhill, right? And the stokers, the engineers actually stepped in and said, you know, that's not okay. That's not okay. It's not her fault. You know, it's nothing she's doing or not doing. And so it was really heartwarming to know that someone actually had my back, you know, and I didn't know that was going on. And I only found out after. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, are you serious? Like, I could have gone to jail and you guys stepped in and said, that's not okay. Like, thank you. Right. But that's what happens, unfortunately. Right. So
do you know even what had happened that it's caused all of those blackouts?
Yeah, it turned out it was literally a little black box, we think, in what we call the forward switchboard. So it was up at the forward of the boat, and it was one of the emergency generators and switchboards that we used. And apparently it was this little black box that just kept malfunctioning. The other thing was that the ship that I sailed on, the HMCS Algonquin, was basically built in the 60s. So by the time I got there, like, it was an old ship. So by then, like, short circuits and firing this and fuses blowing, and with electrical, a lot of times you can't find the problem because it's intermittent, or it's in some cable, you know, some like tiny little wire is just frayed somewhere on the ship, like buried underneath everything else, right? So, you know, they just wanted to lay responsibility on somebody, and I was the, you know, potential scapegoat, right? And, you know, fortunately the stokers stepped in and said, like, not okay, you got to sort your stuff out. So
that's good for them. It shows that you were able to, even despite the differences of you being the only female there, you created friendships there. And they saw the value that you brought on to the ship.
And I actually, that same conversation with the friend, he actually said that when I had left, because I was posted off and was going on a course, he said at that time, I was the best watchkeeper that they had. That when I was on watch, nobody worried about anything, and everybody knew that I could absolutely, whatever emergency or horrendous situation came up, I could handle it. And I was like, oh my God, like, could you have told me that? Like, I didn't know, right? And it was just so affirming, because I had worked for like years and years. I had worked to be the best practitioner I could be. Or sorry, there we go.
Practitioner of electrical.
Best practitioner, which we'll get into. But the best watchkeeper that I could be, because if I wasn't going to do the best I could, why would I be there, right?
So tell us a little bit more about, like, how you became an entrepreneur. You got sick. Was it on the ship? Or how did you find out about this illness? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, sure. So I got to the ship when I was 20 and basically started sailing. I literally was posted on, I think, April 4th, and we left for a sail on April 7th. So it was very quick, like, turnover, adjustment, you know, adaptation. And about a year later, I was noticing when I was coming back from sailing, I was dizzy. But when I sat still, so it wasn't vertigo, it was actually like the opposite of vertigo. So I would often be like, I would start just rocking back and forth, right? And I was noticing I had, you know, a very upset stomach, like an aching in my stomach. I had headaches, just generally like low energy, you know, just like, oh my God, it seems like so much energy to go grocery shopping, you know? So for a 22-year-old female, that's not good, right? Because I couldn't really live my life. So I went to the doctor, and I told the doctor this, and she goes, oh, it's normal. You're just a young female. I'm like, what? She goes, oh, whatever. So I'm like, okay. So I go back and I'm sailing, and I go back to the doctor, and I'm like, there's something going on. Oh, you don't eat enough protein. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I eat enough protein, right? So this is like years, like going back to the doctor years. Oh, you have low iron. Okay, I'm pretty sure I don't have low iron. Oh, you just don't sleep enough. No, I'm pretty sure I'm sleeping enough when I can, you know? And so I wasn't really taken seriously, which is disappointing.
And this was by Western medicine. Sorry, this was by a female doctor, correct?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, it's normal. You're a female. It's your hormones. It's blood pressure. You have low blood iron. Like every shit excuse, you know, that they could have come up with. So when I was done sailing, I got posted to another course. So I got off the boat and I went to the doctor and I looked her in the eye. I remember I sat down and I looked her in the eye and I went, this is not normal. Send me to somebody who can help me figure out what is going on. This is not normal. This is not healthy. This is not normal. I don't want to feel like this. What is going on? So she sent me to a vestibular rehabilitation physiotherapist and we did some tests. I went for 10 sessions, didn't find a thing. And the physiotherapist was like, I am so sorry. I don't know. I started looking for answers. Right. And just being really open to what was a possibility and healthy living, because I was off the ship now. I could reset my circadian rhythm. I was in bed, you know, every night at 10 o'clock, I was like passed out in bed. I'd, you know, set my alarm. I was sleeping every night. I was eating food that I made, right? Because the ship didn't have great food. It's not great food. You know, I was exercising again and getting active and resting. And what I realized is my body could heal itself. It just needed some help. And that help did not look like drugs. It did not look like antidepressants. It did not look like, you know, vestibular anything and whatever, right? So I started just taking a holistic approach. I was doing yoga and chiropractic treatments and physiotherapy and seeing a naturopath. I was getting cranial sacral massages. And I managed to get to a point where I was functional, right? And so by now I was like in my mid-20s and I was functional. And I was like, okay, I guess that's the best I'm gonna get. But I never stopped looking for answers. And I was actually getting physiotherapy for my knee. And I mentioned what was going on to the physiotherapist. And she goes, wait a second, we have a vestibular rehabilitation guy. Let me talk to him. I'm like, oh, okay, great. So I go in the next time and she goes, yeah. So I talked to the other physiotherapist and he actually has heard of your symptoms. I was like, okay, book me in. Like, I need to talk to this guy. Give me an appointment. So by then I had gotten out of the military because I couldn't handle the lifestyle. I was tired of being told where to go, what to do, how to work, you know, when to show up, when to eat. Just like the typical, like, this is why I'm an entrepreneur now, right? So I gotten out. I talked to this physiotherapist, the new vestibular rehabilitation guy. And it was about 2 minutes into the appointment. And I said, you know, these are my symptoms and this is what's going on and this and that. And he goes, okay, so good news. You have a condition called maladisembarkment syndrome. And I was like, oh my God, I know what it is, because knowledge is power, right? If I knew what it was, then I could start, you know, healing or whatever it was, right? And at least I now kind of had a context to work in, right? So he goes, well, that's the good news. The bad news is there's nothing we can do about it. So it got a little bit better, but I was still just managing it, right? Like nothing had really changed. I just got it to a point where I was able to be a little bit functional, right? So I actually, after that, so I found out what it was. I was very excited. Then what he did is he sent me to the hospital to get tests done. Oh my God, they were brutal. Like, so what we discovered is that I was actually missing 47% of my balance mechanism in my right ear. So essentially what was happening is when I had sailed on the ship and I come home, my body couldn't calibrate back from being on the ship doing this to being still, right? You see sailors coming off the ship and they're walking down the jetty like this and they're kind of stumbling, yes. You know, whatever. That was me all the time because my body couldn't reset and calibrate because there was so much stress on every level. So I was like, okay. So then the ears, nose, throat specialist goes, well, you know, I've never heard of this. I'm like, what? You're a specialist. Like, you should know about this. But he goes, yeah. So I did some research and antidepressants have been known to help occasionally sometimes with this. I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, that's way too many unknowns to be messing with my brain chemistry. Like, come on now, right? So thank you, I'll figure it out. It's fine, thank you for your time. So I left there. I was actually taking some courses at Camosun College, which is the college here in Victoria. And I actually was doing a biology course with a gentleman named Bill. And Bill was the teacher and he was amazing. And he had been through it all and he was this older dude and super cool. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna throw this at him. Maybe he knows something about it because he knows a lot about a lot of stuff. So I was like, Bill, here's what's going on. Do you have anything that could help me? And he goes, yeah, you need to talk to my friend Keith. Okay, give me a phone number, right? Because I was open to every possibility. So Keith, he did NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. And so I went and saw Keith and I sat in the chair. And neuro-linguistic programming is really interesting. And I actually don't know a whole lot about it, so I can't talk about it. But if you want to know, I can connect you with people who do know a lot about it. So I sat down and in an hour, I don't know what he did. I don't know what happened. I came to kind of after the hour and it was gone. I healed myself.
Completely? So, like you'd never had those symptoms again?
Never ever.
And so since then you stumbled upon, as you say in your little biography, yeah. On the emotion code.
Yeah. So first, before I stumbled upon the emotion code, I happened to stumble upon BEST, which is bioenergetic synchronization technique. So after being healed by a completely natural, you know, modality and learning more about how the body just, you know, short circuits sometimes, like our brain creates, like our bodies create these symptoms, because that's what they are, to remove us or change something, right? So what my body did was because I was under so much stress mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally in the military, it actually created this thing so that I would get off the boat and never go back. And it worked, except I couldn't come back to being healthy by myself, right? So once I knew that, I was actually looking in and doing chiropractics and becoming a doctor of chiropractics. But there was a missing piece for me. And the missing piece was, why do I have to come back every 10 days for the same treatment, the same adjustment every time? It's the same thing. And if I don't get it, then my body goes out and I get sick. There was a missing piece, right? Like somebody else has to manipulate my body so that I can be healthy. That doesn't make any sense, right? Time and a place for everything. Absolutely. Chiropractic is amazing. And there is just something missing. So universe, I prayed. I was like, I need something. I need a new career. I am open. Please send me something. And man, when you ask, you receive. So I had joined a club called Global Information Network, and they were paired up with Mortar Health System. And Dr. Mortar pioneered BEST. So as part of being, we call it a gin member, we were able to go to these one-day seminars. So Dr. Ted Mortar came to Vancouver. I live on Vancouver Island. He came to Vancouver. So a few of us were like, let's get in a car and go. So we're like, great, let's go. So we hopped in a car, we took the ferry, we went to Vancouver, we go to the seminar and changed my life. And it was before lunch. Dr. Ted was talking on stage. I still to this day do not remember what he said. I don't know what he said, but he said something and something reached into the core of my being and shook it. And I heard, you need to listen to this. I was like, burst out into tears. And I was like, oh my God, I found it. Like the thing I've been looking for, my calling, my passion. I didn't even know what it was. Like I hadn't really experienced it, but it was one of those like knowings, you know, and sometimes things just, they just bust up and come through and you just know, right? So I signed up for the program. I started learning it. I got certified as a best practitioner a year later. And I was the best practitioner up until about June of this year. So that was like 8 years I practiced as a practitioner. So I, in that time, I went back to Camosun and I got a diploma of exercise and wellness, which was great. And I had a business, my own business as a best practitioner for 5 years, like a solid 5 years. And then I had kind of shifted and things were shifting. And COVID hit.
So what are some stories of people that you've helped with and doing this, as you call a pathwalker? What have they experienced after treatments with you?
Yeah. So I actually treated a friend of mine. Her son was, you know, due to the COVID thing, now homeschooling. And he was having problems. He was acting out. And she said he was getting aggressive, you know, this 10-year-old little boy, right? And just not happy and very cranky and upset. And, you know, it's not a good place to live your life, right? Being like that is okay as long as you move through it and just let the energy flow, right? So she contacted me and she's like, you know, I just, my son and this and that, and he's having a lot of trouble with his schoolwork. And I'm like, cool, I'll give him a treatment. So I did a distance treatment. I didn't talk to him. I didn't ask him how he was. I just talked to him through his mom over Facebook Messenger. I did a treatment on him and she messaged me later that afternoon and said, what did you do to my child? I had calls and I came out after 2 hours and he was sitting quietly in the living room after he did all his schoolwork.
It's a very rare thing what you've created, you and the path that you've taken. I would say probably there's not, I don't know of another woman who's done that, who's gone from the Navy to doing energy work, and probably not many men do it as well. So you have taken a very unique path, and you're very passionate to help people and get them out of their pain, and you are investing your life in it, and and it really shines through that you really care about your whole process and the fact that you passed through all of that pain physically, emotionally. It also kind of taught you the hard way of what you wanted in your life, as you said before, and that you were there. Like when you're dealing with clients and they're having that pain, you know how they felt or how they're feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening to Changemakers Without Borders. I'm also on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on community radio stations such as Peach City Radio CFUZ and CKMS Radio Waterloo.